This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. Now, Axiata and Telenor will establish a new merged global entity comprising the diverse market-leading portfolio of telecommunications, digital and infrastructure assets. Now, the proposal involves a union of Axiata's and Telenor's operations in the ASEAN and South Asian markets, and they're going to be working towards a binding agreement, hopefully by the third quarter of this year.
And in terms of the shareholding, Telenor will be the bigger shareholder, holding about 56.5%, while Axiata will end up holding about 43% in terms of the merged entity. And Telenor will get to pick the CEO, while Axiata will get to pick the chairman. So no quarrels there. One would keep a check and balance on the other. But I guess what this really implies is that Telenor is the more powerful of the partnership compared to Axiata.
Yes, and this combined entity will have a pro forma revenue of 50 billion ringgit, and with earnings before interest, taxes and depreciation and amortization, a beta of 20 billion ringgit. And of course, the benefits will be cost savings as much as $5 billion. And they will have a combined customer base of 300 million people. So you are creating a very sizable Asian telco company.
And not just that, they're also going to be a global tower company because they will hold 60,000 towers between the two companies. And they're going to be, you know, as you mentioned, one of the largest telecommunications groups in the region in terms of both value as well as revenue and profit. The strengthened balance sheets will also support both aggressive growth and expansion in the consumer, home, enterprise, as well as the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence market segments.
So I wonder what the MyCC or the Malaysian Competition Commission would say about this deal, because I think that the combined entity, at least in the Malaysian scene, would create quite a gigantic entity, mm-hmm. taking up a pretty big part of the market share. So for MyCC, they would have to consider whether this would result in predatory pricing.
Yeah, would it create a monopoly? Because if you just look at the market share of Digi in Malaysia, they are 28%. And on the other hand, Celcom is 22%. So the two of them combined already have about half of the subscribers in Malaysia. And what does this mean for pricing going forward?
But there are still other viable alternatives in the market, right? Because like Maxis and U Mobile. So wouldn't that be able to compete with this as well?
But we also have our Minister of Telecommunications, right, emphasizing that prices should be fair to all users. And actually, this is the opposite of what Singapore has done. Singapore actually allowed the entrance of a new fourth telco, TPG, into the market. Mm-hmm. And that the purpose of that was to actually bring prices down for all consumers, which did happen because you could see M1, StarHub, Singapore Telecom reducing their package prices quite significantly. So this is the reverse. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what the regulators do in Malaysia, whether they approve this deal.
There's still a lot of players in Malaysia in the form of the mobile virtual operators as well. And they, I think, have done, including U-Mobile, they have done a pretty good job in maintaining a highly competitive environment. Pricings are usually quite low for mobile operators. And the network and the infrastructure is usually not being hoarded by the big players. They're actually farmed out in terms of warehousing as well as wholesaling of these infrastructure to the smaller players who actually do a good job in keeping prices down.
It's true, but prices have kind of remained stable for the last 1 year. You don't see much price competition in the telco space. Actually, the focus of the telco companies in the last 1 year has actually been on quality of service. And in particular, U-Mobile, who recently got their own spectrum, has been, if you notice, rolling out a lot of advertisements saying that their quality, the connectivity is there. So I don't know what will happen in this sector, whether the government will approve the merger of such a large company.
I think probably likely to go through since this Axiata, interesting because it's a GLC and Telenor, a global company. So it'd be an interesting combination. But from a policy viewpoint also, if you want to make the merger profitable, then you have to start laying off people and cut costs on that. So what would the government think of this would be very interesting to me.
Yeah, so just the question of whether the government is going to approve this merger kind of made me wonder what other other mergers that are in the similar space in other countries. And of course, the biggest one that's still ongoing is in the US. So the merger of Sprint as well as T-Mobile. And that, I think, is stalled because state enforcers have the power to go to court to block the deal, even if federal officials at the Justice Department's Antitrust Division as well as the Federal Communications Commission approved it. So that's still an ongoing issue. But there have been other deals as well, like India in Vodafone and Idea Cellular. I think that's been completed. They merged completely last year.
Axiata also has a very regional portfolio. I mean, their footprint is very big. So in terms of mergers and acquisition, whether Telenor, who will be in the driving seat of the merged entity, whether they would do something with those stakes, because at the moment they are just passive stakes, right? Whether you want to activate and catalyze those stakes through M&A is something to look forward to as well.
I think it's also very much part of Telenor's strategy to grow its Asian market, because the markets that they are in, which are mature European markets, haven't been delivering as much growth as they hoped. And in the recent months, actually, Telenor has been doing some M&A. It divested its Eastern European telco companies. And I guess with that money, they're looking at Asia now.
We've also spoken to a couple of analysts, and they've said that this merger is generally positive for Axiata, since they are coming in with a lower valuation of about 44%. And when mergers occur, there's always a party with a less clean balance sheet, and it is this party that tends to gain in the merger. I don't know what you guys think about this.
It's true.
You agree, obviously.
I would agree, because if we just look at DG's track record, it's been pretty good, all right, in Malaysia. The free cash flow generation is very strong, which is why they've always been able to pay 4% and above for yield. Plus, they are one of the lowest cost telco companies. They're very cost conscious. In a way, if they could practice that in Axiata, I think there would be many benefits to this merged entity.
Okay, and in other local news as well, yesterday was day 13 of Datuk Sri Najib Razak's SRC trial, and what we learned from the prosecution's 29th witness was that he was under pressure to expedite a 4 billion ringgit loan for SRC International, and this is the largest loan by value ever approved by QAP, and that's according to the Malaysian Reserve, because the witness was the QAP former assistant vice president of the Fixed Income Department, Amirul Imran Ahmad, and he said he was required to complete the working paper in a hurry, even though he didn't have necessarily all the information.
And he also said that the first 2 billion ringgit tranche had breached QAP's policy and guidelines where the amount should not exceed the company's equity limit. At that time, SRC only had an equity of 1 million ringgit, yet the approved loan application amounted to 4 billion ringgit. In banking practices, if this was ever applied, I think the bank officer would be fired and the bank would be put into the spotlight for lending billions of ringgit to a company that had only 1 million ringgit in capitalization.
Yeah, there seems to be a lack of compliance. There was also a breach of rules in terms of the amount that QAP can lend out must not be more than 10% of the investment allocation in domestic fixed income, and this 2 billion clearly breached that level. Other things that Amrul disclosed was that the finance ministry had asked QAP to release the second tranche of the 2 billion ringgit to SRC before the fund had gotten its government approval for the loan.
Yes, so QAP received a letter from the ministry agreeing to guarantee the loan in line with cabinet approval, but requested that they consider releasing the loan first. And this witness, Amirul, he said that he'd never come across a situation where money was released before a government guarantee came in. And he also testified to having seen a government guarantee letter dated March 27th, 2012, signed by Datuk Sri Najib Razak, who was then Prime Minister and Finance Minister.
I think this also raises a separate question of whether there are too many government guarantees that are given out, because loans are supposed to be a commercial agreement with commercial riskiness. And if the government went to town with all their guarantees, that would not be a very good sign, I guess, to parrot Lim Guan Eng. You know, this should be the past, right? This is what the previous government used to do with people wielding this guarantee and getting money out of it.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, this do we know how many government guarantees are out there, actually?
Yeah.
And the use of it should not be, like, so easy. I mean, there should be some kind of compliance and rules as to before a government can issue a guarantee. But I think during Najib's reign, there were quite a few of these off-balance sheet items which had guarantees, which we only knew about after the elections.
Yes, and so the prosecution, during yesterday's trial, the prosecution's 30th witness, Nur Hayati Mohamed Yunus, also testified on three transfers out of Yayasan One Malaysia Development Berhad's CSR provider to two personal bank accounts belonging to Najib at AmBank Group via multiple cashier's checks, which were where each transfer amounted to 27 million ringgit, 5 million, as well as 10 million ringgit. So I guess just small change on that front. So we'll be back with more news for you after this. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.